So I want to tell you a story that I heard about three preachers. Preachers, you know, have struggles, and sometimes it's hard for a preacher to just share with the people in his church the struggles that he has. So these three guys get the idea that they're going to get together once a week and they're just going to share their struggles with each other. So one day they meet and they're going to go fishing. And they get in a boat and they get all the way out into the middle of the lake. And one of them says, okay, so let's share our struggles with each other. The first one said, my struggle is drinking. And I know that I shouldn't, but I get stressed. And sometimes the people in my church don't even realize this. I go to the bars and I drink and I indulge. And I'm ashamed of myself for it. The other one said, you know, my struggle is with lust and keeping my thought life pure. And it really knocks me down many, many times. And I need your prayers, gentlemen, for this struggle in my life. Well, the first two guys looked at the third preacher and they asked, well, what about you? He said, my struggle's with gossip and I just can't wait for this boat to get back to the shore. Have you ever known people that just can't keep a secret? So you have to be careful who you tell your secrets to. But you know, some secrets need to be told. And some secrets need to be shared. We saw last week that the Apostle Paul said that we are to rejoice in the Lord always. No matter how bad it seems, no matter how bad it gets, no matter what the circumstance may be, to rejoice in the Lord always is a scriptural command. And if you do not do it, you are in disobedience to the Lord. The command to rejoice in the Lord always is for everybody. It's not just for people that are born with a more pleasant disposition. And you might be thinking, well, you know what? You don't understand my circumstances. Paul has no idea what is happening in my life. Maybe he doesn't, but Paul does know something that you still need to learn. So open your Bibles up to Philippians chapter 4, and let's have the Apostle Paul teach us this morning. Philippians 4, we're going to begin in verse 10. Read it in your own Bible. Follow along. It says this. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you have been concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through Him who gives me strength. Now let's do a little bit of a review. Why did Paul write to the church in Philippi? You might remember he had a very good relationship with this church. But as he mentioned, he had lost contact with them. They didn't know where it was that he was. So Paul gets arrested and he is sent to the city of Rome. He's put in jail. And when the church in Philippi heard that the Apostle Paul is in jail, they wanted to do something for him. You see, the prison system that we have today in our culture is not like the Roman prison system. When we put people in jail, your tax dollars pay for their food and their upkeep while they're in jail. But in Rome, when they put you in jail, you'd better have some friends and some family take care of you, or you are going to starve because the Roman government did not pay for you while you were in jail. So when the Philippian church heard that Paul's in jail, they knew he's going to have need. So they gathered up some money and they gave it to one of their servants, Epaphroditus, and he was to go 600 miles to the city of Rome and give this money to Paul so that he could be provided for. And Paul is writing them back now, thanking them for this gift. And that's how we close the book of Philippians with this thank you note to this church. But it's one of the most amazing thank you notes that a preacher has ever written. Because in verse 11, he says, I'm not needing your gift. And then in verse 17, he says, I wasn't seeking your gift. Now, how many times have you heard a preacher say that? How many times have elders given a preacher a raise and the preacher said, well, brothers, thank you, but I didn't need it. I wasn't looking for it. But Paul is quick to say to this church, thank you very much for the gift that you've given to me, but I just want you to know that my relationship with you is not utilitarian. I appreciate your concern for me, but my level of joy is not affected by your level of generosity to me. I've not been pacing the cell here in Rome hoping that the mail's going to come so I can see if somebody sent me some money. In no way did he want to communicate that the physical comfort their money afforded and had any increased ability of his to cope with the circumstances that he found himself in. In fact, he says in verse 17 that the only reason he took their money was so that they could actually be fruitful. Paul wants to thank them for the gift. It was very thoughtful. It was very kind. He could indeed use it, but it did not change his ability to rejoice in the Lord. Paul was not defined by wealth or poverty, but by a contentment that transcended both. Paul had discovered a secret. A secret that kept his personal happiness from being contingent upon the proper arrangement of external circumstances in his life. Now, evidently, it has remained a secret to most. Evidently, most people in America do not know this secret. Because in America, it is the season of discontent. If there could be a song that could sum up our culture, it would be, I can't get no satisfaction. If you're under the age of 40, you might not know that song. It's an old Rolling Stones song, and it is still true today. People are running around today saying, I just can't be content. We are bombarded every single day from the moment that we pick up our cell phone to check our Facebook or from the moment we turn off our TV in the evening. We're getting propaganda thrown at us that's going to say you're never really going to be happy until you buy this, until you move there, until you wear these clothes, until you attend this school, until you go to that club. Every day it is relentless. How can you be happy until? And I want to ask you this morning, has the propaganda of a perpetually dissatisfied culture been affecting your joy level? My friends, we have been looking for contentment in all the wrong places. And there's great irony. We're buying into the culture of this world. We're working 90 hours a week, knocking ourselves out, giving ourselves ulcers and migraines and high blood pressure. And here's the kicker. We're doing it all to try to find what the world doesn't actually have. Paul says they don't have contentment. It's a secret. And they don't know it because they don't know Jesus. But Paul knew it. And Paul lived like he knew it. Look again with me at verse 12, the latter part of the verse from the New Living Translation. It says, I have learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it is with a full stomach or empty, with plenty or little. And Paul was willing to share what he learned. And what I want to do with you this morning is I want to share with you three things Paul learned that made him content in any and every situation that he faced. Here's the first one. Write it down. Paul learned to be satisfied with his blessings. One of the great disgraces of our day is the huge number of ungrateful Christians. We're a little bit like the story I heard of the rich fellow walking down the stairs one day, and he overheard one of the servants in his home say, oh, if I just had $5, wouldn't I be content? So he thought, you know, I'm going to make her day. And he pulls out $5 from his wallet and he gave it to her. She thanked him profusely. He walked off, but when he got around the corner, he thought, said, you know, I'm going to see and listen if she's going to give thanks to the Lord for this blessing that she's received today. And instead, what he heard her say with discontent was, why didn't I say $10? And I think we're like that with the Lord. who pours out blessings on us. He meets our needs. And instead of being content with what we have, it's always, why can I have just a little bit more? Now, Paul said that he knew plenty. Paul also said he knew want. My own opinion is he knew plenty of want. I wonder what Paul means by plenty. I think Paul's definition of plenty is one decent meal and nobody beat me with sticks today. That's a pretty good day. But Paul said, thank you for your gift. I'm not saying this because I am in need. Look at the latter part of verse 11. I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. Contentment cannot be sprayed on. It cannot be driven. It cannot be worn. It cannot be moved into. It cannot be deposited. Paul said the same thing to this young evangelist, Timothy, when he wrote to him in his first letter. But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. I have been in a delivery room two times in my life. First with the birth of my son Jonathan and second with the birth of my son Jacob. And I learned in that delivery room both times Paul was right. You do not bring anything into the world. Nothing. You come into this world naked in every sense of that word, and you're going to leave this world with nothing. And so everything that you have between the time that you come and between the time that you leave is just a temporary gift that God has given to you. Do you know what? My discontentment has never been rooted in a lack of food or a lack of clothing. My discontentment has always been rooted in the lack of a thankful heart or in the lack of a trusting spirit that God's going to take care of me tomorrow. So I want to give you a little test, and I want you to just answer the four questions I'm going to give you in your own mind. Don't say it out loud unless you want everybody to know. But here's the first question. Do you enjoy what you have? I know some Christians that are so covetous of what they have, they hope to get something else, but they don't have it right now, so they're coveting something that they don't have. Do you enjoy what you have? Second question, do you refuse to worry about tomorrow because your good God is going to take care of that for you? Third question, do you regularly and joyfully offer thanksgiving to God? Are you just overwhelmed every day with how good He has actually been to you? And fourth, do you rejoice at the prosperity of other people? You see, what I've found is I, like Paul, know how to be content when I have plenty. My problem is being content when you have plenty. Paul says, I know what it is to have plenty. I know what it is to be in want. And I've learned that it is in those hard times when I have little that you can find out whether or not I really know the secret that Paul is talking about. When I think of this, I can't help but think about my grandma. She was the most important faith figure in my life. My grandmother wasn't a perfect person. Her daughter is here. She can attest to that. But she had a fierce faith in Jesus Christ. She and my grandpa didn't really have a whole lot by the world's standards. I remember being a child at her house, and grandpa would go and get a bucket of chicken from Kentucky Fried Chicken. And my grandmother would always choose the keel. Now, that's not a piece you can get in a chicken, bucket of chicken from Kentucky Fried Chicken anymore. I thought she liked the keel. The keel is this skinny piece of meat that comes from the back of the chicken. It's usually a little tougher piece of meat. There's not a whole lot of meat on it. My grandma always chose the keel when I was young. Do you know why? Some of you mothers already know the answer. She chose it so that everybody else at the table would get a better piece of meat than she did. That is the heritage that I received from her. Paul said in verse 6, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving. Present your request to God. It's not a big secret, folks. You are never going to be a joyful person until you learn to be a grateful person, until you learn to be satisfied with His blessings. Second thing, write it down. Paul learned to be sustained by God's strength. Paul's confidence that God would meet all of his needs was not an affirmation that God would remove all of his difficult circumstances, but it was a belief that God would provide the resources in Christ to cope with any circumstance he found himself in. He's not saying God's going to take away all my problems. He's saying God is going to give him the resources in the midst of his problems to do everything that Jesus wants him to do. We know this verse. We love this verse. For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. That's our favorite verse. We love to put that on our refrigerators. It's on coffee mugs. But my concern is that we use this verse as a motivation for pep talks to champions. November 9th, 1996, Evander Holyfield upset Mike Tyson in the championship boxing match. Afterwards, Evander Holyfield took out a full-page ad in the New York Times giving thanks to all of the people that prayed for him. And at the bottom of that page, he put Philippians 4:13. Now, that's very cool that he shared his faith like that. But I don't think that's what the Apostle Paul had in mind when he wrote that. When the Apostle Paul wrote Philippians 4:13, he wasn't talking about winning Super Bowls or boxing championships or getting a big promotion or winning an election. He was in prison. He didn't look anything like a winner. He was not a strong man. He was a man with a strong confidence in the ability of Christ to give him strength in every situation. I want you to look with me at a verse from 2 Corinthians. Remember, in that section, Paul said that he had this thorn in his flesh. He'd actually asked God to remove this thorn from him. Christ said no. But look at 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." That word in this verse, sufficient, is a significant word because it is the exact same Greek word that we get our word contentment from. In other words, the reason that Paul could be content in any situation because his sufficiency is in Jesus, not in his circumstance. I've spoken of Hudson Taylor before, the incredible missionary to China. One time somebody congratulated him and said that the mission work that you've done is an amazing thing. And Hudson Taylor responded and said, "It seemed to me that God looked over the whole world to find a man who was weak enough to do his work. And when he at last found me, he said, 'He's weak enough, he'll do.'" All God's giants have been weak men who did great things for God, because they reckoned on Jesus and on God being with them. And so when Paul says, "I can do all things through Christ," he's not talking about winning some kind of championship. He's not talking about making it to the top of a corporate ladder. Paul is saying, even in the midst of a stinking cell with feces and urine and rats, I can do everything that Christ wants me to do because he will give me the strength to do it. And whatever it is that Christ wants us to do, he will give us the strength to do. I think we believe that. I think that we believe that Christ has the power. I think we believe that Christ wants to share the power. I just don't think we know how to plug into that power. How do we receive the power from Christ? I want to give you a hint. I think the problem is we want to experience the power before the test, instead of along the way. Let me illustrate that. Remember, the children of Israel were told to go to the promised land. And they were on one side of the Jordan River, and the land of Canaan, the promised land, was on the other side. And the river was at flood stage. There was no way that they were going to be able to get across that river. But God said, something almost comical to them. He said, in the morning, I want you all to line up and just walk across the river. All stop the river. Well, they get up. The river is still going. They line up. They start walking. And the river is still going. 100 yards, 50 yards, 10 yards. The river is still going. The Bible says they get into the river up to their ankles, and the power of God shows up and the river stops. What's the point? The point is, if you want to experience God's power, you take a step of obedience and faith and do what God says, and God will show up along the way and give you the strength to complete the mission that He has given to you. We want the power before we obey. God says, you obey, and I'll show up and I'll give you the power. How many of us have been outside in the hall of a hospital room, and we didn't know what to say to the person as we go in because there's a person in that room lying on a bed and they're dying, and we weren't sure how to handle the situation, but we were obedient and we walked into that room. We trusted God and He showed up and He gave us the power to minister and He gave us the words to say. How many of us have been in a situation where we have been afraid to share our faith? But we knew God wanted us to share our faith. And so we take a step of obedience and we trust God and we open up our mouth for Jesus. And in that moment, God's power rested on us and we found ourselves able to share and change a life because we acted in faith. If I did not believe Philippians 4:13, I would not be able to stand up here and preach to you. If I had to know that every sermon was powerful before I stood up here and preached, because I know most of them aren't, then I could never do it. I can't tell you how many times I have finished a sermon earlier in the week and I just didn't like it. And I prayed to the Lord, Lord, it's a pitiful offering. It's just two mites, but it's the best I can do this week. But I step up here and I preach with passion and I preach with conviction. Because I believe if I'm obedient, Christ's strength will show up and His power will come and He will change lives even with a sermon as pitiful as the one I'm offering today. I remember hearing a story about a woman in England, and she was a little widow. She was uneducated, unsophisticated. She had no money, but she spent her whole life going around doing good deeds for people. And on her tombstone they put, "She did what she couldn't." I love that. Christ gives you the power to do what you can't. Look at that verse one more time from the Living Bible. I can do everything God asks me to with the help of Christ who gives me the strength and power. Can I ask you right now in your life, what is God asking you to do that you cannot? There's somebody at work that needs to hear about Jesus. And you think, I can't do that. I don't know what people would think. Philippians chapter 4 verse 13 says, you go out in faith and God will show up and He will give you the power. I know I need to be faithful. I know I need to tithe. I need to trust God with my finances. But honestly, I'm just not there yet. Step out in obedience. And God will show up and give you the strength to do it. I think there are people that have in this room right now that came to church this morning thinking, my marriage is really in a bad place right now. Philippians 4:13 says that you can step out in faith and obedience to God, and He will give you the strength to stay faithful to the covenant you made one day before a holy God. Our problem is not I can't. Our problem is I won't. Reminds me of the third thing that Paul said, or that Paul learned. Paul learned to be surrendered to God's will. I don't think that you can understand Paul's contentment until you understand Paul's commitment. Circumstances did not crater his life because Paul was not preoccupied with his circumstances. He was preoccupied with how he could honor Christ in any and every circumstance. He was so totally surrendered to Jesus Christ, it didn't matter what you threw at him, Paul was going to honor Christ. He said this earlier in the book of Philippians. So that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. We're talking about a man that is absolutely sold out to Christ. When I began the series, I read Philippians several times before I started preaching through this series. There are 104 verses in this book. And in 104 verses, Paul mentions Jesus Christ 51 times. Now, I'm not a Bible scholar, but I can figure out what the theme of Philippians is. You have a guy that is absolutely sold out to Christ. It's like the story I told you about the little guy that went to Sunday school for the very first time, and his mama asked later, well, what did you think of the teacher? He said, well, she must have been Jesus' grandmother because that's all she talked about. You can't get Paul to talk about anything, to think about anything, to focus on anything but Jesus Christ. So let's do a little bit of a review. Chapter 1's point in the book of Philippians, Jesus Christ is my purpose. I'm in jail. I don't know if I'm going to live or if I'm going to die, but I have one purpose, and that is to honor Christ. And I can do that whether I live or whether I die. Chapter 2's point, Jesus Christ is my pattern. He humbled himself. He became obedient to death. He emptied himself to serve others, and that is exactly what I am going to do. Chapter 3's point, Jesus Christ is my prize. All of that stuff that I used to think was valuable, all of that stuff I used to put all my hope in, it is garbage compared to Jesus. I'm going to forget everything, and I'm going to press on and take hold of the one who has taken hold of me. Chapter 4's point, Jesus Christ is my provision. He can meet my needs. He can give me the strength. You see, Paul was absolutely sold out to Jesus Christ. He had discovered the serenity of a totally surrendered life. And friends, I don't think you're ever going to find contentment until you do that as well. I think one reason Christians are not content is because we give a 50% commitment to Jesus and a 50% commitment to the agenda of this world, and we wonder why we're so uptight. If you want to have contentment, sell out to Jesus. It reminds me of William Booth, the founder of the Salvation Army. He was asked one time the secret of his success. Just the question made him choke up. He had to compose himself. And after he had done so, he finally said, there have been many men with more brains and more opportunity than me. But I determined that God would have all of William Booth that there is to give. A few years later, somebody told his daughter what he had said. And she said, well, that's really not the secret. The secret was, my daddy never took it back. It's not any big secret if you know Paul why he was content. Let me tell you one line that's the secret. This is the theme of Philippians. Write this down. I can rejoice in anything when Jesus Christ is everything. Paul faced life as it came without flinching because Christ was his all in all. Circumstances can change his surroundings. He might have a lot to eat. He may have nothing to eat. He might be in prison. He might be set free. It did not matter what changed around him because Jesus Christ did not change in him. Everything about your life can change when you leave this building. But Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I want to ask you, church, do you believe that? We're going to sing a song of invitation. And if you've got a decision, would you stand up as we get ready to sing together